Welcome to the Isaka Podcast. On today's 50th Anniversary Series podcast, we are joined by technology futurist Daniel Burris, CEO of Burris Research and author of 7 best-selling books, the latest being The Anticipatory Organization, Turn Disruption and Change into Opportunity and Advantage. Welcome, Daniel. Thank you for being with us today.
Hey, thank you. It's my pleasure.
To set the stage, you have a track record of successfully forecasting technological change. Not easy to do. Can you provide a few examples for our listeners of some tech trends that you have seen coming over the years?
Yes, I started this company, believe it or not, 35 years ago. And I think in that time, if I go back to 1983 when I started it, one of the things I did was I came up with a list of 20 technologies that categories that would be increasing at an exponential rate and create the disruptions and the change for decades to come. On that list of 20 was artificial intelligence, expert systems, the internet, digital, genetic engineering. You get the idea. In other words, that list of 20 has held up for 35 years as the list. And from that, I also came up with a way of separating what I call the hard trends from the soft trends, meaning the hard trends are based on future facts. They will happen. The advantage of them is you can see them coming before they happen, allowing you to turn disruption into a choice. And you can also use that to see problems before they happen so that you have the option of pre-solving them. And then the soft trends are based on assumptions about the future. And the power of a soft trend is if you don't like it, you can change it. So using my methodology, for example, in 83, one of the predictions is that I would sequence the gene code, that we as a world would sequence the human gene code by the year 2000. That was a 1983 prediction that did happen in 2000. The project didn't even start until 1990. But again, using the methodologies that I teach in my books and my writings, I've had hundreds of predictions that are accurate like that one.
At the other end of the spectrum, what might be a few major technological shifts that have caught you by surprise?
Well, the beauty of the hard trend, soft trend methodology that I teach is that there's not a lot of surprises. The bigger surprises that you can get is the surprises around the human part and their acceptance or their reluctance to take advantage of those things. And so that can play a role in it. For example, we might, this is a global audience we're listening to right now, and we know what's going on with electric vehicles, we know what's happening with solar, with wind, and yet, and I'm not really being political, I'm just stating a fact that I think everybody knows, that is the current U.S. Government is not really promoting those and is doing kind of the opposite and trying to promote the coal and the petroleum and the other things. So, you know, that can slow the motion of something that's going to happen anyway. In other words, solar, wind, electric vehicles, that's going to happen regardless of whether you like them or not. It is a hard trend going forward. But humans can slow that trend down. As a matter of fact, this is germane to this podcast group, and that is that globalization. It would almost seem like globalization is being slowed down right now or stopped because we have nations, again, like the U.S. and others, that are starting to get more insular and say, no, we're not going to have open trade like we have before, and we're going to be more nationalistic. But the reality is globalization is a hard trend. It's enabled by technology. And even if you don't like something, you cannot necessarily stop it. For example, if a government doesn't like electric vehicles, and that doesn't mean that you can stop the massive spread of vehicles like that. For example, in Germany, we've got Volkswagen and a number of other big auto manufacturers that are doing the same thing the U.S. auto manufacturers are doing, and they're looking at the giant market in China and Europe and other places, and saying, you know, we have to go where the market is going, and it's going towards the future. It's not going towards the past. By the way, one other quick statement. There's the both-and principle that is important in being accurate about predicting the future, which means that when something new comes along, we tend to think that means the old is dead. But that's the either-or. Either it's this or that. The reality is the future is both the old and the new. The key is in how they're integrated. So what I'm getting at is, oh, we're going to have a lot more electric vehicles, but we also will have gas and diesel. The key is, where are we putting electric, and where are we putting gas and diesel? In other words, the old, we're going to be increasingly paperless, but at the same point, we're going to still have paper 20 years from now. The key is, what are you using paper for? Are you using it strategically, or are you just using it? So it's a both-and world.
Generally speaking, are you more optimistic or pessimistic about the impact that AI will make on society?
Oh, I'm optimistic about it. I was just in a meeting in Washington, D.C. regarding AI and cybersecurity with the Department of Defense and a lot of defense contractors. And I work in a lot of fields around the world with AI. So let me just talk about what it is. And that is that we are going to have, as humans, a symbiotic relationship with AI. And briefly, symbiosis is where you have two living organisms that are separate, but they cannot survive without each other. Increasingly, that's what we're going to be. So right now, if you take a AI like Watson, that's IBM's, although there are many types, but let's just take IBM's Watson, it has learned and knows more about oncology than any oncologist. Of course, that's a doctor that treats cancer. So if you have a loved one that has cancer, I'm going to give you one of three choices. You can only pick one. Choice number one, a really good oncologist. Choice number two, just Watson, the supercomputer. Or choice three, a really good oncologist that has access to Watson. That is symbiotic computing. So really, we have augmented thinking, a little different than driving. It's the augmentation of our thinking based on getting the, just-in-time insights and knowledge from AI as we go forward. So I see it as not as big a threat as we all see. But we do have to come up with, again, what are we using it for and how are we applying it? Because technology by itself is not good or evil. It's who's using it and for what purpose. In other words, it comes back to us good old humans. So I think there will be people that will try to use it in negative ways, just like there's people that will continue to hack our computer systems, even though we will come up with ways to try to protect that. And by the way, that's another area that you get into. Let me just very quickly say that one of the things we're going to do is be more anticipatory. That's the name of my latest book, The Anticipatory Organization. And when it comes to cybersecurity, rather than be reactionary only, which means responding quickly after you're hacked, we're also going to be anticipatory using behavior analytics, personality profiles, and other things so that we can detect something before it is stolen or hacked and keep it from happening in the first place. So that's, again, an example of the both-and principle. There will be things that we can't anticipate. We better be able to react quickly. That's agility. And then there are things that we can anticipate, the other side of agility, which is not reacting quickly, but it is anticipating accurately, and we can pre-solve those problems. So the two go together.
What do you see as being some of the most promising AI-driven opportunities that are on the near-term horizon?
Well, there is something called the cognitive domain, and the higher levels of the cognitive domain is analysis, problem solving, synthesis. I mean, those are things that humans do really well. The lower levels is really where AI is currently trying to get a good foothold and starting to do a little bit better. And I think what we're doing is, again, not so much replacing humans, but rather augmenting their thinking. And let me give you an example of that. Right now, let's take auditing and tax. There was a company that I've been working with that was looking at their tax work, and they were going to go to India to job out some of the lower routine processes with tax. But they had failed to look at the fact that an AI application currently could do a lot of the things that they were going to take to India at a much lower price. So in that case, they didn't need to go to India. They needed to go to AI. So there are a lot of things that AI can do right now that is very positive and can save us money, and at the same time free humans to do what humans do best, and that is help the people that we're serving, if it's a tax client, be more strategic about future decisions based on either current regulations or regulations that are emerging or regulations they didn't even know about.
So on a semi-related note, how do you expect the impact of automation on the tech workforce will net out in the coming decades?
Well, that's a really great question. If humans were incapable of learning new things, I would be extremely worried. But because there's an old saying, you can't teach an old dog a new trick. The good news is we're not dogs. So humans are capable of learning new things. So continuously learning the new is going to be the new norm, because there's going to be a lot of new things to learn so that we as humans can stay relevant. Now, with that said, there's a lot of people that don't want to learn new things. Well, they're going to have trouble in this new world. So either they're going to have increasing financial difficulties on a personal level, or they're eventually going to realize, maybe I need to learn something new. And today there are ways of learning new things that that go beyond just going to a school or a university. There's a lot of tools. And as a matter of fact, I see us offering a lot of free tools to help people learn new things so that we don't deal with mass global unemployment. In other words, that kind of learning is going to be, governments are going to be really getting involved in doing that to make sure people are creating a positive future for themselves and others.
What is your sense of how far away we are from quantum computing becoming a more widespread consideration for enterprises?
Well, it's still got a ways. It's a little farther off in the horizon, but remember, the horizon is getting a lot closer than it used to be. So what I would say is that right now that China is really investing very heavily in AI as well as quantum computing. And IBM has done some great breakthroughs, as well as Google and others in quantum. But China is going to be coming on strong. So I think we will see over this next 10 years some major breakthroughs in quantum. And I think one of the first things we're going to want to do is get into quantum encryption, because the way we encrypt all of our data will be obsolete from quantum computers. In other words, there's zero safety once you really get quantum computing going, unless we have quantum encryption. So I'm suggesting that a giant growth area is going to be quantum encryption as we look out towards the last 5 years of the next 10 years, because that's when quantum's going to start, you know, taking a bigger foothold. So again, you're not going to see much this year or next year, but I want it on your radar because it is something that is real and not going away. It's just got a little more time it's going to take to play out.
In your dealings with enterprise leaders, how do you advise them to plan for the future amid such a fluid technological landscape?
Well, thanks for asking. I think the breakthrough that I've come up with and have helped organizations with is applying the hard trend, soft trend methodology. And again, if people want to learn more about that, they can go to Burrus, BURRUS.com. I've got a lot of things they can get on that. Hard trends are future facts. They will happen. Now, you can't stop them, but you can see them ahead of time coming. And so, for example, with demographics in the United States, there's 78 million baby boomers. Hard trend. They're going to get older. They're not going to all of a sudden get young. So we can know a lot of future facts about that, and we can see a lot of problems that we could either pre-solve or let play out. And by the way, a a problem that hasn't happened yet is an opportunity for any company that wants to develop a low-risk, high-margin product. So there's demographics. There's also technology. For example, a lot of us know that 5G wireless is coming soon to you. Well, we've had 1G, 2G, 3G, 4G, now 5G, is that it? And of course, I think all of our listeners know, well, after that, you could even predict you'll get 6G followed by 7G. I've been predicting not only when it'll come out, but how powerful it will be for since we had 1G, because it's on a very predictable exponential growth curve, just like bandwidth has been, just like storage has been, just like computing processing has been, all very predictable. So what I do is I help people to find certainty in a world of uncertainty, because strategy based on uncertainty has high risk. Strategy based on certainty has low risk. So you got to ask, what are you certain about? And just like I'm certain that once you get a smartphone, you're not going back to a dumb phone. And once people in China get refrigeration for their home, they're not going to say, we don't need refrigeration. Or once they park the bicycle and get a car, they're not going back to the bike. Those are one-way changes. Those are not cycles. And they have predictable problems and predictable opportunities. So there are hard trends that are future facts that let you see disruption before it disrupts so that you have that as an opportunity and a choice. And then there are the soft trends. As I mentioned, those are the things you can change. Let me give you a quick example. again, we have a global audience here, but I think most of us around the world have read about healthcare issues in the U.S. And healthcare costs have been going up in the United States. And is that a hard trend that's unstoppable, or is it a soft trend that you could change? And of course, it's a soft trend you could change. However, most people think it's a hard trend. Therefore, they don't try to change it. They just try to figure out how are we going to pay for it. But you could use blockchain, for example, to bring a transparency and trust and increasing security to the U.S. healthcare system and lower costs by billions of dollars. And by the way, that will indeed happen. You could use virtualization and other tools to transform, not change, but to transform purchasing and logistics of hospitals and wipe out billions of dollars of costs. In other words, you could actually lower the cost of healthcare. That's a soft trend. So I love soft trends. If you don't like them, you can change them. I love hard trends. Once you know what's going to happen before it happens, you have an advantage. So that's how we have been able to help clients around the world really transform how they plan and how they innovate. One other thing, by the way, I'll just add, and that is it changes how you manage risk. You know, if you have a certain disruption that is coming and you can see it coming and you know it's a future fact, and then you have discerned an opportunity for you around that hard trend future fact, then the risk has flipped. Because now, instead of it being risky to innovate around that, actually, the risk is to not innovate around that. Because if you don't do it, someone else will. It flips risk.
You've mentioned soft trends and hard trends. What other tools or methodology can leaders draw upon to make the most informed guesses at what the future might look like?
I could come, or someone else could come, and say, here are some trends that are going to impact your future, and you better act on them now. And of course, that's a threat. And that represents change coming from the outside in. And change does tend to come from the outside in, but transformation, whether it's personal or organizational, tends to come from the inside out. So in other words, instead of saying, here are the trends, good luck, I found it more powerful to give people a methodology. Once again, I'm separating the hard trends that will happen from the soft trends that might happen. And realize that by attaching an opportunity to a trend, it brings it to life. Because a trend by itself is not that interesting until you attach an opportunity to it. And by doing that and having clients actually use the methodology to come up with the trends that they can see will happen, that will impact their company and what is the related opportunity, or impact their customer and what's the related opportunity, they end up owning the answer and do take action on it. So until I came up with a way of doing that, I found it to be more difficult to get people to act on those trends that are shaping the future, because they were coming from me instead of coming from them. You know, that the best answer is a question where the person that you want to give the answer to derives the answer on their own, that because that way they own the answer.
To wrap up, given the remarkable pace of technological change, as we look ahead to the next 50 years for ISACA's professional community, what type of mindset is going to be most constructive for technology practitioners to adopt?
Well, thank you for asking that. It's really important. The pace of change, especially technology-driven change, is accelerating at an exponential rate. It's been going on for a long time, very predictable. And what that means is things are not slowing down. They're actually speeding up. And the mindset that we need to have is an anticipatory mindset. That's why I've called the latest book The Anticipatory Organization. And the reason for that is you have two choices to deal with rapid change. One is agility. There's two sides to that strategy coin. And most companies understand agility, which is, by the way, reacting quickly after a problem occurs, reacting quickly after a disruption disrupts. And there are a lot of things you cannot predict. There are a lot of things that will come out of the blue, which means you do need to be agile. And that is important. But in a world of increasing pace of change, of exponential change, if all you're doing is reacting after a problem, after a disruption, it'll serve you less every year. You're not going to be a happy camper on planet Earth. That's why an anticipatory mindset is so vital, because once you learn how to anticipate problems before you have them so you can pre-solve them instead of just reacting to them after they happen, once you learn how to see the disruptions coming before they disrupt and then choose to be the disruptor instead of by default being the disrupted, you'll see that you can create change from the inside out, better yet, transformation, and have more control in shaping your personal future.
Excellent. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your forward-looking insights.
My pleasure. Thank you.
For our listeners, head to theaobook.com for a complimentary copy of The Anticipatory Organization. All you need to do is pay for the FedEx shipping. And for more on ISACA's 50th anniversary, visit isaca50.org.